once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And if today is where you are, the 18th of August, 2018.
18, 2018. It's just an interesting. There's a lot of eights in there.
It's 8-18-18.
This is we broke a record in doing this. If today is that day, you can call in. Is what you were going to say, and
right,
I interrupted
you. If it's 8-18-18, where you are, unless you're on the other side of the Pacific from the United States, then excuse me, 8-19 over there already. I think
it could be.
And then you're certainly welcome to give us a call at 254. Now, if you're outside the United States, it's 1+254. 773-1400, and you can comment or ask questions or anything. As long as it has to do with economics or investing, we can probably address it.
Speaking of which,
I can do the disclaimers after the telephone call.
Right.
We have a telephone call on 773-1400, so caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, guys, really enjoy the show. I know you don't give specific guidance to people's investments, but everybody's different. In general, though, if you're a millennial just starting out and you're offered to open up a 401k or IRA, should you automatically go to a Roth IRA, or if you're, again, just starting out, go conventional? I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for the call there. There is no automatic. I wish there was an easy way to approach it, but the easiest way to approach it, that still doesn't make it completely easy. So you have to make a judgment call over whether you think, particularly as a young person beginning your career, if you think that you're going to be earning more money now or later in your life. If you believe that you'll be earning a lot more money later in your life, that tends to mean that you'll be pulling money out of your retirement account in larger amounts later on. You'll be in a higher tax bracket. So given the choice, most millennials, this is a kind of a broad sweeping statement, most millennials, most young investors are likely to make more later in their life as their skills increase, as their education gets better, and the whole process of getting better at what you do means you get paid more. That tends to put you in a higher tax bracket. So if you're putting the money away today and you pay the taxes today in a low tax bracket for your life, and you can take it out much later without paying taxes on it when you would be in a higher tax bracket, then you should do a Roth. There's a danger associated with this kind of automatic tendency to go to a Roth, though. There are calculations that we've been working on for, how long have we been working on this spreadsheet since the new tax law came out?
Yeah, and there's some general facts out of it, but there's, as you said, giving individual advice is something we don't do, and it doesn't work.
Right. We give individual advice to individuals rather than on the air, but the reality is that choosing to convert your IRA to a Roth IRA needs to be done individually. It needs to be looked at very carefully because there are a lot of weirdnesses that happen in the tax code.
Yeah, and it boils down to the fact that you need to have some time to recoup the tax loss you take when you convert. And this is here's the irony that I've run into. If you're still working and you've got enough time before you need to take the money out, by definition, you're in a higher tax bracket than you probably will be when you retire.
And here's the other piece of this. And this is, you know, if you think that you're in a higher tax bracket now than you will be in retirement and you want to convert to a Roth IRA today, personally, I will say it's probably not a good idea. From the perspective of the general public, I will thank you for paying the extra taxes to pay for our defense and everything else. But if we're talking one-on-one, and we look at a situation like that, I would say, why are you doing that? To some people, the convenience of never having to pay taxes again on it in a Roth IRA may be worth it. I haven't met those people yet, but they may exist.
There are some rare people, and I do mean rare, maybe the people we've looked at so far, maybe 10% or less, because of the fact that we have the Trump tax cuts in place, are in a lower income tax position than they probably will be in the future. And the problem is, of course, again, the time value of money. If you throw in there, how much do you think all those taxes that you paid would have appreciated if you just left them in the market rather than pulling them out and paying them to the government? It throws the entire calculation off if you change the expected rate of return even a little bit.
Yeah, here's the goofiness of this whole concept of what's better, a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA. So we've established the methodology to choose if you're a young investor. If you're looking at converting your existing IRA to a Roth IRA, there's some funniness that creeps in, and that is that a dollar in a Roth IRA is worth more than a dollar in a traditional IRA. But there's not a really good way of representing that, because it's worth a lot more in years when you're making a lot of money and worth a lot less in years where you're not making a lot of money.
And it all depends on how the tax rate is.
Right. So if you're making a lot of money, your tax rate goes up, means that your Roth IRA is worth more because you don't have to pay taxes on it, even though the dollar number doesn't change at all. So that's the weirdness of when taxes become a part of investing. When you look at two different account balances and you see this one is worth $100,000 and this one's worth $100,000, if one's a Roth IRA, it's worth more than the one that, even if they're identical dollar numbers. However, if you take money out of your traditional IRA to convert it over to the Roth, you've got to find money generally out of your pocket to pay the taxes. Otherwise, you might have to pay the taxes on the money that you took out to pay the taxes, which is a little bit more complicated. Come forward to what's it worth. If you have a $100,000 in a traditional IRA and you take it all and you convert it to a Roth IRA, it's worth a lot less than if you took a partial amount and did it. In some circumstances, because that $100,000 may increase your tax bracket up into the highest tax bracket. So this is where you've got to personalize this. You got to get this to an individual level. And we do this. It's just one of those things that we have to approach it very carefully. And we have to make assumptions about what your taxes are going to be next year and the year after that as well.
Here's the one thing I can tell you with a great deal of certainty. If you're a millennial...
Wait a minute. Great deal of certainty after talking about taxes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's the thing I can tell you with a great deal of certainty. If you're talking about this millennial young person who has the opportunity to contribute to a 401k or an IRA, do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, whether it's a... Very frankly, this is what I've... If the millennial has three kids and a house mortgage and... are basically is in a relatively low tax position, the problem they're going to run into isn't whether to do a Roth or a regular. It's where do they find the money to do it?
Yeah, and that's the big thing. Find the money.
If you're working for a company that provides, let's say, a 5% match or something, you're absolutely nuts not to contribute. If up to 5% of your pay goes into the 401k and the company matches it, put the 5% in there and let the company match it. And if it's a regular 401k, great, because despite the fact that the tax rates are low and everything else, there's a big plus here, and that is because you don't pay withholding tax. The income withholding tax, on the money you put into a regular 401k, not a Roth 401k, and then they throw 5% on top of that, let's say they double your money, there's no way that you would want to do anything else. There's no debate there. The issue is you have more money to contribute to the 401k if you take the match and you don't pay taxes on it. And we have another caller
on 773-1400, don't we?
Yes, we do. We do. And caller, you are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Rick in Salado.
Hey, Rick.
Rick. Hey, how's the war?
You're the nobility, right?
Yeah, the war on poverty. How's the war? We winning?
Which one? Which one?
The war on poverty? Man, we won that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We won it? Okay.
We did.
Fire.
Poverty is, and this is something that Americans have a lot of trouble getting their mind wrapped around. Mm-hmm. The definition of, what do we going to call it, poverty? The poverty line or something?
Yeah, that moves. That line is moving.
But the point is that right now in the United States, and I just put this in the newsletter, so
it's official.
People at the lowest end of the economic spectrum are getting the highest wage increases, and they have the lowest unemployment since we've been measuring such things.
Mm-hmm.
The recent surge in employment and rise in wages has been at the very low end of the economic spectrum. We have a labor shortage at the unskilled level, and companies are more and more and more willing to train workers. And that's, by the way, their alternative to raising wages for everybody is to hire unskilled workers and train them. They consider that to be less expensive than raising pay for skilled workers.
Right.
And so the war on poverty, if you want a job, I mean, if you want a job, you can get a job. Now, whether you have to work two jobs or three jobs to live at the standard of living that you prefer is an obvious open question. But the bottom line to it is everybody in the United States who's willing to do what it takes to get a job can get a job. There's not any. We literally don't have people in the United States today who are willing to work, willing to move to where the job is, who can't find a job.
Right. And that second piece is the big one. Yeah. Go ahead.
I had a friend.
You had a friend?
I had one at once.
Okay.
But he told me a long time ago, he didn't really want a job in the Army. He wanted a position. He didn't want a job. He just wanted a position.
Mm-hmm. I got you.
Is that what everybody wants nowadays?
Tenured professor there. Just have a position.
Right. Now, what I called was I wanted you to spend the next couple of months explaining to people about socialism.
Okay.
Can
do.
You know,
you're involved.
Have to do the next couple of months, but I'm just saying that there's so many people out there that have no clue.
You support socialism, don't you?
On how that's supposed to work.
You support socialism, don't you?
Me?
I'm
65.
You get so you're drawing Social Security.
I'm now reaping the benefits of socialism.
Yes, I mean it's literally called Social Security.
I know.
And you probably got Medicare.
He's 65. I hope you have Medicare.
You've got all the socialist aspects of our government wrapped up, and you're eating up about a third of the you're participating in eating up between a third to two thirds. Of the federal budget?
I don't feel one bit of guilt, dude. You know?
But you're a classic conservative. I hate socialism except when they're paying me.
Entitled.
I didn't get to drive the train, and I didn't even get to ring the bell. But if it jumped the track, you guess what? We're going to catch the hell.
That may be, but this particular train is unlikely to jump the track.
Well, we hope. We got some fixes.
We need to put more money into it. Well, you're going to have to explain it, how the host and the parasite works. Okay?
Can do. We'll talk about socialism from one end to the other. We got to play some commercials. So thanks for the call, Rick.
It's so rampant right now. People need to know what's going on.
What, commercials?
Commercials or socialism?
That too.
All right.
Commercial socialism.
You have a good time in Salado and stay out of the heat and the pollen.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, it's going to get 100 today. Bye.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Okay, we've got to play some commercials. We'll be back on the other side. We'll finish up our disclosure and hit some socialism commentary. We'll be back on the other side. If you want to join the conversation, it's 254-773-1400.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And I need to give some disclosures here. The Personal Wealth Coach is not only the name of a radio program, it's also the name of an SEC-registered investment advisory firm that gives wealth management advice and provides management in Salado, Texas. And the two guys on here, Jeff and
Jake.
See, he's... We're programmed to do that, are also the principal advisors there. So there's no coincidence. Those two things are both the same. But we're not giving investment advice here. We're giving education because investment advice is given to individuals. The information that we present on this radio program is information we have obtained from sources that we believe to be reliable and have a level of integrity. But we don't make any warranties or guarantee as to the accuracy of the information. And our opinions and anything we say here has nothing to do with Town Square Media's opinions, and Town Square Media's opinions as expressed in commercials or whatever have nothing to do with ours.
Right.
I think that pretty much covers it.
Well done. So socialism.
Well, we haven't done the markets.
Oh, yeah. Hit the markets and then I'll hit socialism. I'll try to hit it as hard as I can.
How hard do you want me to hit them?
Hit the markets and hit the street.
Well, there you go. The Standard Poor's 500 stock index, the one we track, is done very well over the last 12 months. It's up 17.5%. Year to date, it's up 6.6. For the week, it was up 0.6%, which was pretty darn good, all things considered. The Dow weekly was up 1.41%. It's up 18% for 52 weeks, so it's in the same ballpark. The NASDAQ actually lost 0.3% for the week. Year-to-date, it's up 13, which is up a bunch more. It means it's more variable, more volatile than is the S&P 500. The NASDAQ is hovering up near its records. The S&P 500 still hasn't gotten up to where it was at the end of January, just before tariffs were announced. Tariffs tend to still be holding it down. Now, the interesting thing will occur this week by some measures. On the 22nd of this month, by some people's estimate, we will tie or break the longest running bull market in the history of markets, in the history of the United States stock market.
I would mark that as mildly interesting.
It's only mildly interesting because technically, the two bear markets that the people who are claiming this see occurring, one was in 1990, and another one, I mean, there was a series of, for instance, the 1990 bear market was actually 19.9%, not 20%. Therefore, it technically wasn't a bear market. It missed it by a tenth of a percent. 1998.
Well, the March 1991 recovery through March of 2001, it's a decade.
Yeah,
it's
but
a good
the point is that the 1990 bear market really wasn't quite a bear market. It missed it by a tenth of a percent.
Oh, it's very close.
It's close.
Very
so if close. You count that as a bear market, then we had a decade-long bull market.
If you don't count the bear market, it was a longer bull market because it missed a bear market by a tenth of a point.
And if you don't count those not quite bear markets, if you count those as not bear markets, then you got to go all the way back to 1987. Which means that bull market that ran from 1987 all the way until 2000 would just dwarf anything and everything. So it's not a big deal, but if you're rounding to the nearest percent, we're about to have the longest running bull market in the history of the United States unless we get a bear market in the next few days.
There's a couple of ways of measuring economic recoveries. Number one, you can look at a market. And you can say this is a bull market. It is. It's a very long-running bull market. It's pretty cool.
It's a weak bull.
Nice.
It's a bull everybody hates.
Right. It's not been strong. It's been more like an ox pulling a plow than a normal bull.
So we could say an ox market.
An ox market, yes. And why are economists not worried when we're about to, you know, arguably break a record for longest-running bull market? It's because it's been so weak. If we look back at the 1960s, if we look back at the 1990s, if you go back throughout the history that we have of the GDP, our GDP recovery has been very, very smooth, but very, very shallow. So if you go back to 2008 and then compare what our GDP has grown since then, it's close to 40% improved versus the GDP growth from the beginning of 91 through the beginning of 2001 was closer to 80% improvement. So that's why economists are not horribly worried about this really long-running bull market.
Now, the record that is going to be interesting to break won't occur for a year. In July, if we make it through July of 2019 without a recession, we will have the longest expansion post-World War II.
Economic expansion.
Longest economic expansion that we've had. Of course, it has been a relatively weak expansion based on history, and it started off with a secular recession.
The Great Recession.
Right. I don't know why they call it great, because I don't know anybody that thought it was that great.
Well, they didn't think the Depression was great either, but it's called the Great Depression.
It was that Great Depression. Oh, I did. I liked it a lot more than that kind of mediocre depression.
So the fact that people are paying attention to the fact that we've now had a long run on the bull market and therefore they're pessimistic and want to pull out because they're scared is, by the way, a strong indication
that
the bull market has got some more legs in it and some more to run. And the reason we say that is when you see this much pessimism, and there is a lot of pessimism out there.
Yeah.
And a lot of fear. It's good to remember a saying that I, in my mere 35 years of observing this stuff, have found to be unswervingly true, and that is John Templeton's statement that you can quote it.
Well, I was going to, but first I have to correct you.
What's that?
36 years.
36 years.
Yeah.
Well,
you got to update that every year.
I officially got my securities license in 1983. So,
but you were tracking it in 82. I mean,
right,
you were doing
I was
business.
Actually in the financial world, but I didn't get my securities license until 83.
Okay.
So, yeah, well, I'm in the, somewhere 35, 36 years.
Okay, so the
we
John
can
Templeton
round it to
quote.
The nearest 10 and make it 40.
Do you want the good quote or the simple quote?
I don't care.
The bull market climbs a wall of worry is the simple quote.
Mm-hmm. I like John Templeton's quote, which is more complex.
That is John Templeton. They're both John Templeton quotes. So bull market climbs a wall of worry is one of John Templeton's quotes. The other one is a bull market is born on pessimism, matures on optimism, and dies on euphoria.
And we're fresh out of euphoria.
Yeah,
so
there's not any euphoria around.
Well, this bull market has got legs. That doesn't mean that we don't have a lot of things to worry about. It doesn't mean that, as Professor Shiller announced last week, that the potential is not there to have something knock it off. But very frankly, the strength of this bull market can be measured in the fact that the level of tariffs that we have seen imposed recently would have broken any other bull market in my memory,
right.
except maybe the bull market of the 1990s, because exactly 20 years ago, we had, by the way, one of the countries where the Asian contagion started.
Just exactly 20 years ago,
we had
the Asian contagion. Yeah, and one of the places where it started was
Turkey. And Turkey is going into crater mode with its lira dropping like the proverbial rock.
Yeah.
And
this is an area I worked with Professor Mortensen at Wharton when I was experiencing my time there studying for my designation. And he's the guy responsible for the Asian contagion. He was a Nobel Prize winner well before this.
Well, he wasn't responsible, but he was certainly part of it.
No, he was responsible. He ran the hedge fund that was doing the bot, the Thai...
The long-term capital bot. Growth.
Yeah. Thai bot to Russian ruble with a lira conversion in the middle from Turkey. He said he was picking up... This is his words. I was picking up pennies in front of a steamroller. The steamroller hit a bump.
And You know, this is one of those reasons that there was a little bit of nervousness in the market this, which is good in the market this week. Finally, towards the end of the week, by the way, the reason we saw a rise in the markets is the conclusion was reached among analysts and pundits that the Turkish lira is no threat to the U.S. corporate earnings.
And the Chinese are back at the negotiating table
right.
in Washington,
well,
which could mean nothing or it could mean a lot.
They scheduled to come back to the
right.
They have a long term plan.
The flight went over for the first intermediary. They have landed. The first intermediary's gotten here, and there's a rumor that they're going to make a deal.
Right, and
but the rumor is based on nothing, as far as I can tell. So,
and interestingly enough, the announcement that came out of the administration is it will be fixed by November, which is there something else happening in November this year?
I think there's a few things happening across the country in November. Maybe some degree of correlation.
But so the market continues up. But interesting, and we've talked about this before, but it's important we're talking about the market to realize something. We just had, well, the second quarter is got 90% reporting now, and it's like we're looking at 24.5% in one quarter growth from the previous year in corporate earnings. First quarter, we had very similar growth. We have huge rises in corporate earnings, and the market's up 6.6%. So
right.
we have a caller on 773-1400.
And we haven't forgotten the last caller's question about socialism. We'll get to
okay.
it in just a moment. Okay, so caller on 773.
He gave us 2 months.
Yeah, in the months ahead. And okay. caller on 773-1400, you are on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me pretty good?
I think so. Pretty good.
Okay, I just wanted to ask you a simple question. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but as long as y'all been involved in helping people with their money and making everything improvements for everybody, would you consider yourself a millionaire knowing how to handle money? And if not, why aren't you? And I'm not trying to be smart about this. I just want a simple answer. I just ask you a simple question. You have a good day, sir.
Thanks for the call.
That's an interesting question.
I would.
And basically what he's saying, if you're so smart, why ain't you rich?
And the answer to that is we would
yes.
consider ourselves out.
Oh, a very simple question.
Very yes. simple answer. Yes.
Yes. But again, let me tell you something about being a millionaire. If you want to retire with any degree of comfort, let me give you an example. Let's say you had a 401k with $1 million in it, and that's what you had. And you said, I want to retire. How much money can I take out a year from that 401k from a balanced, moderately managed, well-managed 401k, and I'm going to convert it to an IRA, and I'm going to take withdrawals. What percentage a year can I take out of there safely? And the answer is 4%.
So you're talking about $40,000 a year, which is not high-rolling
yeah.
lifestyle.
So a millionaire,
it's not as big as it used to be.
If a person has $1 million invested in a retirement plan, $40,000 a year, that's before taxes, is a pretty good estimate of the income that they should expect to draw.
And then you have the flip side of that. Somebody can be a millionaire without having it invested
right.
in income-producing anything.
That's right.
They could own a part of a ranch that nobody's willing to sell at the moment. They could. So being a millionaire on paper is different than having $1 million that you can spend.
I still,
if you've got $1 million that you can spend, you've got a high rolling lifestyle, but you'll probably not have your $1 million once it's spent. That's the thing.
I think that if you're a billionaire, you're probably well up there and living a pretty high life.
Yeah,
standard.
You could do that if you'd like.
But there's billionaires and there's billionaires too.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me touch on something real quick. We got some more commercials to play, but socialism. We have the caller call in about socialism. A caller called in. What is socialism? What we're going to do first, imagine a line in your mind going from left to right or right to left. It doesn't matter. On the far left side, we're going to say socialism. On the far right side, we're going to say capitalism. This isn't like a political right and left. So throw that out of your mind first. The left wing does not necessarily mean they're socialist, and the right wing doesn't necessarily mean they're capitalist. So throw that out. We're just talking about economics, not about politics. It's dangerous because these forms of economics have interwoven throughout politics of all kinds of different places. So Venezuela is an example of socialism that didn't work very well. Cuba is an example of socialism that didn't work very well. The Soviet Union is an example of socialism that didn't work very well. But I'm going to tell you some things, some areas of socialism that's worked extremely well. The family unit is socialism. So in a perfect world, I mean, just think about this. You have babies. The babies are not going to be making money for the family for quite some time. The parents are probably never going to get any monetary recompense for the efforts that went into raising the child. This is purely out of love, devotion, genetics, whatever you want to call it, that cause us to have the ability to be absolutely generous with our children. They didn't work for it. I mean, if they did, it was, picking up their room. That's not going to pay for three meals and a bed, cleaning up one room when you're the one that made the mess. So socialism is this concept that the people that make a lot of money can share it with the people that don't. And as long as it's voluntary, it works very well. If everybody involved is volunteering to do it, it's a fantastic system. It's beautiful. It is a family unit. As soon as it's mandatory, you get slackers involved. You get people that just basic human nature says if you don't have to work, you don't necessarily have to work. So while I brought up the Soviet Union and Venezuela and Cuba as really bad examples of socialism, Denmark has a socialist system that's working fairly well. It's not huge on the innovation spectrum. I wouldn't consider it the best form of, but it's very comfortable and a lot of happy people there.
Norway has the most productive workers in the world.
Yeah.
One of the best life expectancies in the world.
Yeah.
One of the best happiness ratings in the world, and is, by its own admission, a democratic socialist government.
Right. Now, innovation suffers even in really good socialism, because hunger is one of the components in innovation. Talked about this last week, but I'd say it again. Most of the big American companies that throughout American history that have gone on to lead the world in whatever it was that they did started with a founder who was out of work. And in socialism, you don't get that kind of hunger. You don't get that kind of innovation. That's a kind of pain that's there. Now let's go to the other end of the spectrum, to pure capitalism. Pure capitalism with no socialism doesn't work at all. It causes massive monopolies that basically become a feudal system. It goes back in time to the age of the nobility, only it's new nobility. It's the nouveau nobility. And that's very documentable because before we had antitrust laws in the United States, we had the monopoly, for instance, on steel. Andrew Carnegie had U.S. Steel and basically ran roughshod over anybody that would start a steel manufacturing facility of any kind. He would literally have people show up and beat them up. Nope, you can't do this. This is steel, and steel belongs to Carnegie. And that's a feudal system. Going pure capitalism eventually destroys the thing that makes capitalism work, which is competition.
Well, in essence, if you're in the United States, you're a socialist.
Yeah, to some extent. It's just a how much
unless you are. Unless you have elected to say, no, I'm not going to take my Social Security, and no, I'm not going to take my Medicare. There's no law that requires that. They're not going to put you in jail if you don't sign up for Medicare. They're not going to put you in jail if you don't accept your Social Security. You can go ahead and pay your own medical bills if you want to. And you can go ahead and ignore the fact that Social Security is willing to pay you money. And if you're a true anti-socialist, this is, as a matter of principle, you should do that.
And there's another area that we are extremely socialist, and that's the military. Well, wait a minute. This is the realm of the on the political spectrum, the right mm-hmm. wing, to protect the military. But the reality is that the military is not a for-profit institution. It is not. We don't want a for-profit military. That form of socialism to protect capitalism is a requirement. We've got to have the ability to have people who are paid for the common good to protect people who are able to raise mm-hmm. the standard of living for the common by having capitalism.
We have, by any measure I know of, the most efficient, most competent military in the world. And I think it's interesting that it is run in an entirely socialistic manner.
It's meritorious socialism. Well, it's still meritorious.
It's only meritorious to a degree, because if you have a certain number of people in and they're all E4s, and some of them working really hard.
By seniority, not by merit.
But some of them are working really, really hard, and some of them are slacking off. They get paid exactly the same amount.
Right.
Which is pure socialism.
And in that group, if they're all together, and one of them must be in charge, it's the one that has the longest time.
Time and grade.
So what that says is that we have meritocracy in there as well, in that we tend to promote people who are better at what they're doing.
Well, at least to get better ratings from their commanders.
Yeah. And there's politics involved and everything. So the concept here is that socialism by itself isn't bad, and capitalism by itself isn't bad. Neither of them are good or bad by themselves. It's the mixture of the two that causes a functional system. And throughout history, even when you talk about Norway and Denmark, the socialism that they have is also merit-based. What failed in Cuba and in Venezuela and in the Soviet Union is they removed the merit-based anything. It was pure fairness, time and grade, how many people are in your family, that determined not how long you spent in medical school.
You can basically quote Marx there. Marx said, from each according to their ability, to each according to their need.
Right. And it's a beautiful family unit.
And we have some degree of that.
But, yeah.
Lynn Willie and I had a couple of conversations about this, and I hope he hears some of this. By the way, while I'm on the subject of Lynn Willie, he very specifically decided not. Do you need more commercials?
We've got commercials coming up. I was just letting you know.
Okay. He very specifically said he could not. He would not be the person to answer why a bunch of so-called conservatives in Congress suddenly decided that borrowing $1 trillion a year to infinity or more was suddenly a very, very good idea because the Republicans controlled Congress now, whereas when the Democrats had the White House and the Senate, suddenly, during that time period, borrowing a lot of money was a horrific, nasty, terrible, evil thing.
Yeah, we'll shut down the government over the debt ceiling.
Now they're in charge. They want to borrow over their bill, by the way, the tax cut bill combined with the new military spending bill, makes anything that President Obama and the Democrats put together in the way of deficits look like a pop gun compared to an 8-inch cannon. I mean, it is the amount of money that we will borrow over the next 7 years in the United States, according to the law. And I'm not saying this is not my numbers, this is their numbers.
You're right.
Is absolutely astronomical and will take, by everybody's estimate, will take the public debt held by the public to 100% of GDP. I really don't understand that. Anyway, you've got some commercials to play.
Yeah, we got to play some commercials, and that was not us saying we didn't like the military spending bill. We've been saying we need to spend more on military for a while. There are other places that you can cut. There's other places that you can step back, and we've got to fix some things. Social Security, Medicare are part of that. All right, so we've got to play some commercials. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you want to call in and join the conversation, the phone number in here is 254-773-1400. We'll be back on the other side.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You've accidentally cut your daughter's bangs unevenly. Do you A, line things up a centimeter from her hairline?
Man, oh man.
No, sweatbands are so hot right now. Everyone's wearing them. Like that basketball player and that other basketball player.
B, get spiritual.
Mom, where did all the mirrors go?
A reflection could never capture our true selves.
Huh?
Beauty is within.
C, look on the bright side.
Less time blow drying, more time texting.
Or D, show empathy.
Mom, you really don't have
to... Ta-da! Twinsies!
I kinda love it. As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org/TX. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
If you're dreaming of something greater, a college degree, job skills, or technical training, serving part-time in the Army National Guard can help make your dreams a reality. Right now, the Army National Guard is offering up to a $20,000 enlistment bonus or a $350 per month educational stipend to qualified candidates as well as those with prior military service. Already received your education or are currently in school? You may be eligible for up to $50,000 in student loan repayment. These benefits can help you get the education you need to land the civilian career you want. Plus, as a proud member of the Guard, you'll experience the personal fulfillment of serving your community during emergencies and natural disasters. To learn more about the many benefits that come with part-time service in the Army National Guard, visit NationalGuard.com today. Sponsored by the Texas National Guard, aired by the Texas Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Welcome back to the Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, tail-wagging, backyard-hanging, and, of course, companionship.
And what breed would you say Satchmo is?
I'd have to go with maybe a lavish terrier-hound-chihuahua-looking kind of mix.
Tremendous dog.
I'd also like to point out Satchmo's coloring, a white, gray, brown, black brindle. Simply marvelous.
You know, it's such a treat to watch a dog like this.
Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive. And now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance, so common with this group.
And finally, the loving face lick.
It's great how he just gets in there and, well, licks.
Fantastic. But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Some knowledge belongs to us and us alone. The way our girlfriends walk. The way they talk. The way they touch their hair. We hold details that only a sister can know about her girls. But what about our other girls? The ones that we carry with us every day. Can we describe them when everything's right? Can we feel when something's wrong? Our bond with our sister girls gives life. But knowing your breath can save it. Go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. That's knowyourgirls.org, brought to you by Susan G. Coleman and the Ad Council.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And if you want to call in here, the telephone number, presuming today is August 18th where you are of 2018, would be 254-773-1400. And just coincidentally, somebody is waiting on 254-773-1400 to go on the air. Nope, they stopped waiting.
So just wrap up that whole socialism, capitalism thing. So if you guys recall the line left to right, socialism to capitalism. Now let's make that into a plus sign, a line going up and down. And if you had low regulation or no regulation at the top, and, well, let's make that at the bottom. No regulation at the bottom, over-regulation at the top, you can see a where a country falls in that kind of crosshair pattern. If they've got over-regulation and they're a capitalistic country, well, then you probably don't have monopolies, but it might stifle innovation. If you're overregulated and you're a socialist company or country, then you lose a lot of freedoms. So there's this kind of spectrum that you have to look at to see what's the... It's part of what economists look at when they're looking at economies of other countries. And we've got a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes. I'd like to know if there is a cutoff of the money to the wealthy people, which we have now and we did not have whenever Social Security was started. In other words, I'm from Seattle, so here we have Bill Gates and the Jeff Bezos, and people who are not exactly that wealthy, but moderately wealthy.
Right.
Is there a cutoff of Social Security funds for them?
No, that's called means testing. It's one of the things that I think it's probably an important factor that needs to be added to Social Security is if you have billions of dollars and Social Security is in the process of failing, you probably shouldn't be receiving the Social Security check. Now, the question is, where is the line? That's where politics jumps in and says we've got to determine when somebody that has been paying into Social Security their entire life doesn't get Social Security because they have too much money.
If a person has what's called earned income, which is wages,
What if it isn't earned income?
I'm trying to say something here. Earned income, if you have enough of it, and it's a little bit complex, but still, if you have enough of it, it causes your Social Security payment to drop because it becomes fully taxable. But no, there is no cutoff. Basically, the theory behind Social Security is everybody pays in, everybody gets a benefit.
No, it's not a very workable theory long term.
You know, like Bill Gates paid in a heck of a lot of money to Social Security.
He paid out at the maximum level, which is every year they change. There is a cap on that.
But how much
gets Social Security taxation. But he paid the maximum amount his entire career.
One of the ways of fixing Social Security, there's a little three things that could fix Social Security very easily at this point. One of them is to have, no matter how much money you make, you still pay in.
Yeah.
But leave the cap alone. But then the second element of the fix is once you make over, I think it was $250,000 a year of income from any source, then your Social Security benefit gets trimmed so that at like $350,000 a year it goes away. That's the other thing. And the last one, if you do the third thing, which is instead of having the full retirement benefit at age 60, it's gradually moving up to age 67 right now. Just keep it moving when it hits 67 and take it to 70 slowly. If you did those three things, then Social Security would be fixed. Otherwise, Social Security is going to go broke. I say broke. It's not going to go completely broke. But the Social Security Trust Fund Board of Trustees says in 2034, there will need to be a 20% cut across the board in Social Security benefits under current law. The Wharton School just came out this week and said, no, not 2034. Let's make it like 2030. Because you're going to get up and down movements in the market and some of the assumptions made by the Social Security Trust Fund Board of Trustees, we're a little overly optimistic, and I happen to agree. Sometime, because we will get a recession, and probably a pretty severe one sometime in that time frame. As a matter of fact, there is and it's interesting, 2030, 2034, my reckoning of long-term economic trends suggests we're going to have a pretty severe recession, conceivably a depression, beginning around 2030. And it's interesting how, if you look at all the big cycles, they all come together right around 2030, just like they did in 1930. And if that is in fact true, then, well, among other things, the several organizations have now come out, including the Congressional Budget Office, and said if the bill that is currently about to be introduced in the by Representative Brady in the House Ways and Means Committee.
News Talk KTEM AM 1400 Temple, Texas, and streaming online at ktemnews.com.